This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Somali pirates snagged their largest offshore prize to date, a Saudi oil tanker. On land, Somali Islamic militants strengthen their grip in key cities, and fighting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That's all on today's Africa Update with Amira Wood. She's co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. How are you?
I'm well on this snowy D.C. day.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, I had no idea. Well, let's talk about pirates. It's one of those things that you would think are out of the history books, but Somali raiders started taking over commercial vessels. And this week, they took over a Saudi super tanker loaded with crude oil worth at least $100 million. This ship is three times the size of an aircraft carrier, and the pirates tend not to take the cargo, but they hold it and the crew hostage and ask for ransom. They pulled in millions of dollars. So why do you think that, you know, this piracy has rekindled in Somalia, and what does it say that they were able to take over a ship of this size with this kind of cargo?
Well, the critical thing here, Farai, is that the Somali economy is essentially in shambles. People don't have access to jobs that can pay a meaningful wage. And so what you have in the midst of this, again, lawlessness because of the crisis in Somalia over a lack of a government, you have now people trying to find whatever means they can to survive. So this is actually one of, according to Al Jazeera, 63 ships that have been captured this year alone. And I think it is a sign that the desperation is intensifying and more people are looking to much less legal means, let's say, Farai, to try to make a living.
Well, the U.S. Navy is calling for these ships to arm themselves for protection. Let's listen to Commander Jane Campbell talking to CNN.
Perhaps the only measure that could have protected this vessel is if it had had an embarked security team. We have been making recommendations since the problem began to escalate, to have the merchant mariners take increasingly proactive action.
It sounds like open warfare on the high seas, you know, very much, again, something that is almost out of a book. What kind of rules apply to a situation like this? Is it kind of, you know, anything goes?
Well, Farai, this is the irony here. It's almost as if the Bush administration has militarized, again, in a foreign policy that puts the military first. It's almost like every nail is a hammer. So you have seen the steady militarization of this area with U.S. Navy operations very active, really, for the last 2 years now throughout these waterways. But it hasn't made a difference. Again, you have to go to the root causes of the crisis. The root cause is the lack of a government and the lack of a viable economy there in Somalia. Once you're able to create a space where people can make a living, have a decent wage, be able to put food on the table for their children, there will be less of a tendency towards this type of illicit activity. So instead of further escalating the crisis, we need to look at really addressing the root causes to be able to create a more livable and peaceful Somalia.
Now, inland, Islamist insurgents have been taking over towns in Somalia. They took over the key port city of Mirka without firing a shot. These Islamists control a large and expanding region of south central Somalia. They're imposing Sharia or fundamentalist Islamic law. We're going to talk more about the impact of that religious law in a few minutes. But could these rebels take over Mogadishu, the capital?
Well, we have had now over these last few months a steady movement further of what is, in the eyes of many Somalis, a much more legitimate governing force than the one that's currently in place. Remember, it was December 2006 when the U.S. actually ousted the Union of Islamic Courts in Somalia. The Union of Islamic Courts had brought for a six-month period when they ruled the first ever period of peace since 1992 for Somalia. So you had this six-month window where people could send their children to school, women could walk in the streets freely, and there was a sense that life could begin again. Yet because they had Islamic in their name, the Bush administration decided, no, that was unacceptable, and went forward and working with Ethiopian ground troops and U.S. airstrikes and also U.S. naval operations actually ousted that government. What you have had since is an incursion of these now insurgents that have been organizing, steadily organizing and gaining strength throughout the country. And they are now right at the doorstep of Mogadishu, according to many reports. So it is very likely that this clamoring for a sense of determining their own future will lead to a more outright victory there in Somalia, and that you will have this current government that's been sort of propped up by Ethiopia and the United States in short order losing its legitimacy.
All right. We have a couple more things to touch on. Not a lot of time, but horrible story again in Somalia. A young rape victim, some people say as young as 13, some people say as old as 23, but certainly a young girl or woman was publicly stoned to death for adultery in a very brutal situation after she said that she was raped by three men. Do you think that there is any will to try to stop incidents like this? That policy, though certainly not, I think, universal, was related to an interpretation of religious law. Who's going to stop it?
Well, I think we have to be clear. There are women living under Muslim law that are, some are facing extraordinary challenges, and many others are, in spite of living under Muslim law, are taking leadership in a number of areas. You see human rights defenders all the way from Western Sahara to Somalia, where women peace activists in Somalia have been clamoring for peace and justice in the country, not just for women, but for all Somalis. So I think we because again of the difficult situation, we have to remember that Somalia is 90% Muslim, not extremist Muslim, but 90% Muslim. And we have to understand that there has to be a space to not hear Islam and not hear Muslim and hear extremists. So,
okay.
So clearly there's a lot of opportunity to work with Somali women who are taking forward advances in women's rights, advances in women's political processes, even as we speak, Farai.
Amira, we really have just, you know, a tiny bit of time. What should we keep our eyes on in the Congo? Micro.
Well, we got to keep our eyes on the resources, the flow of resources from the Congo, the coltan that creates our cell phones and our computers. That is the root of the fighting in the Congo. And until we can have a Congo where the resources serve the interests of the people, we will continue to have crises like we do today.
Amira, thank you.
Thank you.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She joined us from her headquarters in Washington, D.C.